Chapter 43. The card dangled above the old lady's bed. It read, "God is near." But it wasn't like the usual religious text. It didn't have a frame or ornate printing. It was just a strip of cardboard about 8 inches long, with plain lettering which might have said, "No smoking" or "Exit," and it was looped carelessly over an old gas bracket, so that Miss Stubbs, from where she lay, could look up at it and read, "God is near," in square, black capitals. There wasn't much more Miss Stubbs could see, perhaps a few feet of privet hedge through the frayed curtains, but mainly it was just the cluttered little room which had been her world for so many years. The room was on the ground floor and in the front of the cottage, and as I came out through the wilderness which had once been a garden, I could see the dogs watching me from where they had jumped up onto the old lady's bed. And when I knocked on the door, the place almost erupted with their barking. It was always like this. I had been visiting regularly for over a year, and the pattern never changed. The furious barking. Then Mrs. Broadwith, who looked after Miss Stubbs, would push all the animals but my patient into the back kitchen and open the door. And I would go in and see Miss Stubbs in the corner in her bed with the card hanging over it. She had been there for a long time, and would never get up again. But she never mentioned her illness and pain to me. All her concern was for her 3 dogs and 2 cats. Today it was old Prince, and I was worried about him. It was his heart. Just about the most spectacular valvular incompetence I'd ever heard. He was waiting for me as I came in, pleased as ever to see me, his long fringed tail waving gently. The sight of that tail used to make me think there must be a lot of Irish setter in Prince, but I was inclined to change my mind as I worked my way forward over the bulging black and white body to the shaggy head and upstanding Alsatian ears. Miss Stubbs often used to call him Mr. Hines, and though he may have not had 57 varieties in him, his hybrid vigour had stood him in good stead. With his heart, he should have been dead long ago. "I thought I'd best give you a ring, Mr. Elliot," Mrs. Broadwith said. She was a comfortable elderly widow with a square, ruddy face contrasting sharply with the pinched features on the pillow. "He's been coughing right bad this week, and this morning he was a bit staggery. Still eats well, though."
"I bet he does."
I ran my hands over the rolls of fat on the ribs. "It would take something really drastic to put old Prince off his grub." Miss Stubbs laughed from the bed, and the old dog, his mouth wide, eyes dancing, seemed to be joining in the joke. I put my stethoscope over his heart and listened, knowing well what I was going to hear. They say the heart is supposed to go lub-dup, lub-dup, but Prince's went swish-swoosh, swish-swoosh. There seemed to be nearly as much blood leaking back as there was being pumped into the circulatory system. And another thing. The swish-swoosh was a good bit faster than last time. He was on oral digitalis, but it wasn't quite doing its job. Gloomily, I moved the stethoscope over the rest of the chest. Like all old dogs with chronic heart weakness, he had never present bronchitis, and I listened without enthusiasm to the symphony of whistles, rails, squeaks, and bubbles which signal the workings of Prince's lungs. The old dog stood very erect and proud, his tail still waving slowly. He always took it as a tremendous compliment when I examined him, and there was no doubt he was enjoying himself now. Fortunately, his was not a very painful ailment. Straightening up, I patted his head, and he responded immediately by trying to put his paws on my chest. He didn't quite make it, and even that slight exertion started his ribs heaving and his tongue lolling. I gave him an intramuscular injection of digitalin, and another of morphine hydrochloride, which he accepted with apparent pleasure as part of the game. "I hope that will steady his heart and breathing, Miss Stubbs. You'll find he'll be a bit dopey for the rest of the day, and that'll help too. Carry on with the tablets, and I'm going to leave you some more medicine for his bronchitis." I handed over the bottle of my old standby mixture of ipecacuanha and ammonium acetate. The next stage of the visit began now, as Mrs. Broadwith brought me a cup of tea and the rest of the animals were let out of the kitchen. There were Ben, a Celium, and Sally, a Cocker Spaniel, and they started a deafening barking contest with Prince. They were closely followed by the cats, Arthur and Susie, who stalked in gracefully and began to rub themselves against my trouser legs. It was the usual scenario for the many cups of tea I had drunk with Miss Stubbs under the little card which dangled above her bed. "How are you today?" I asked.
"Oh, much better," she replied,
and immediately, as always, changed the subject. Mostly she liked to talk about her pets and the ones she had known right back to her girlhood. She spoke a lot, too, about the days when her family were alive. She loved to describe the escapades of her three brothers, and today she showed me a photograph which Mrs. Broadwith had found at the bottom of a drawer. I took it from her, and three young men in the knee breeches and the round caps of the 90s smiled up at me from the yellowed old print. They all held long churchwarden pipes, and the impish humour in their expressions came down undimmed over the years.
"My word! They look really bright lads, Miss Stubbs," I said. "Oh, they were young rips," she exclaimed.
She threw back her head and laughed, and for a moment her face was radiant, transfigured by her memories. The things I had heard in the village came back to me, about the prosperous father and his family who lived in the big house many years ago. Then the foreign investments which crashed, and the sudden change in circumstances.
"When Dowd feller died, he was about skint," an old man had said. "There's not much brass there now."
Probably just enough brass to keep Miss Stubbs and her animals alive and to pay Mrs. Broadwith. Not enough to keep the garden dug or the house painted or for any of the normal little luxuries. And sitting there drinking my tea with the dogs in a row by the bedside and the cats making themselves comfortable on the bed itself, I felt as I'd often felt before, a bit afraid of the responsibility I had.